Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Analysis of your Toronto Blue Jays and Major League Baseball. This is Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
All right, it is time for Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Jeff Blair and Ben Nicholson-Smith. Ray Ratto of CSN Bay Area will join us at 11:30. Very cool thing happening this weekend. Barry Zito and Tim Hudson are going to hook up. Barry Zito was signed by the Oakland A's, and he'll face Tim Hudson. Zito, Hudson, Mulder, part of, you know, you see all these staffs through baseball history. The staffs with had great young arms come together at the same time. Sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't, and this is kind of a cool little story. And for a lot of us, Barry Zito is kind of a, I wouldn't say he's a spiritual guy, but he was kind of a guy that helped Tim Lincecum be Tim Lincecum. And anybody who does that is good in my books, because as I've always said, baseball's better when Tim Lincecum's happy. Anyhow, Ray Ratto will join us, and I'm sure he'll have some witty thoughts as well about the pennant race. And Ben, speaking of the pennant race, the Jays, by the time they take the field tomorrow for the second game of that series against Tampa, they could in fact have at least a wild card spot sewed up if they get some help tonight, and if they beat Tampa in the first of three games. It's almost, I spoke to someone yesterday, and we were kind of talking about the Russ Martin home run, and that person said, you know, it was for him, the Russ Martin home run was when it kind of became real.
Right.
It kind of became real that, they're going to clinch something. They're going to clinch something. Up to that point, this guy was saying, yeah, you know, you like the numbers and all the odds were saying the Jays were going to make the playoffs, but the Russ Martin home run for him kind of suggested that that it's going to be real. And, I mean, you've done the preview to this series on sportsnet.ca, and this is not a slam dunk by any stretch of the imagination, is it, this series?
Well, not at all, and I think the big reason for that is you look at the first two starters that the Blue Jays are facing. You have Jake Odorizzi tonight. And then you have Chris Archer. And Archer and Price on Saturday, that's going to be a great game to watch. But, you know, anytime you're going up against pitchers that talented, it doesn't matter what kind of bats you have. They can shut down a big offense on any given night.
And I've always said, we had someone ask us during one of our shows a couple of weeks ago, which pitcher, if I could pick one pitcher in baseball to pitch a big game for me, who would it be? Well, now it would probably be David Price, but at the time I said Chris Archer.
Sure.
I think Chris Archer's the next David Price.
Yeah, he's right there in that conversation. You know, he's got so much going for him, and I think that he's probably tabbed as that projectable guy, tall and slender, and now it's all coming together for him where, really, he's probably up there in that, he's not going to win the Cy Young, but he's probably just shy of Keuchel and David Price in that discussion. So he's on track to being one of those elite pitchers in the American League.
Ben Nicholson-Smith is co-conspirator with Arden Zwelling on the At the Letters podcast. He's also one of my seven bosses here as a baseball editor of sportsnet.ca. All right, you're a fairly young fellow. We were talking with Jerry Howarth, or I was talking with Jerry Howarth and Stephen Brunner earlier, and we were talking about the difference in crowds we're seeing at the Rogers Center. And Buck Martinez was the first to point this out to me a couple of weeks ago. He said, this is a much younger crowd than what we saw in 92, 93. There's much more of a party atmosphere. It's much less corporate than 92, 93. A lot of these people are your age group.
Yep.
And a lot of them haven't had playoff success to cheer before. We've talked to a lot of people about, hey, what does this mean to people who are around in 92, 93? What are the similarities? What are the differences? And for people your age, try to put in words what this feels like.
Well, I think that going back to your comment about the Russell Martin home run, it's taken a while for it to get to the point where it feels like it's real, because for so long the team was hovering around 500. And I think there's been a pattern in recent years of hope toward the beginning of the season and ultimately disappointment midway through the year or toward the end of the season. And that has just not happened this year. That moment has never happened where you end up getting disappointed and the Yankees run off with it and the Blue Jays are looking ahead all of a sudden to the next season. So, yeah, I think that for people who are in their 20s or in their 30s, it's something entirely different. And I think even in the course of the season, the crowd has changed, where early in the year, it's a little emptier. People are more likely to be on their phones. Now people are riveted. Jamie Campbell's telling people what the score of the Royals game is, and everyone's hooked on his every word on the scoreboard, trying to figure out if the Blue Jays are going to finish with the top seed.
Yeah, it's that to me was, and I'm trying to remember what game it was where Jamie came on the scoreboard, the center field scoreboard, and gave an update on the Yankees game. And it might have been a Sunday game. It gave an update in the Yankees game. And the crowd cheered when, you know how they show the plays, they showed a highlight. The crowd cheered when the play was developing. It was somebody hitting a double. And it was almost as if the crowd was watching the play and cheering along with it. And I think maybe that's when I kind of thought, oh, yeah, this is different. This, and Jerry made the point. These crowds don't wait until two out, two strikes in the ninth inning to stand. These crowds are standing, well, David Price's first start, they were standing when he made his first pitch, but these crowds are standing in the second inning, a key at bat, two strikes on the batter. You're seeing the entire crowd standing up and really getting into it. And it is, it's interesting because I've had guys like George King, who's covered the Yankees, covered the American League East for a long time with the New York Post, and Mark Feinsand, who covers the Yankees for the New York Daily News, both said the same thing. They said it was so odd to come to Toronto in September, watch a baseball game, and find yourself thinking, this is really loud.
Yeah.
Like this is really, even, and these are guys who've, you know, who can remember the old Yankee Stadium, which was still the old Yankee Stadium when it went nuts. It shook. Brunt and I were in the auxiliary press box in the 2001 World Series when Derek Jeter became Mr. November. And that's probably the most scared I've been in a stadium, because it was really, I mean, your laptop was going like that because it was shaking. And you're getting that sort of sense from this crowd, is that it's really into it. They're obviously engaged, Ben, because of social media, which didn't exist. Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah,
it's a lot of fun just to be around and watch for somebody who, you know, hasn't gone through it before.
For sure. And for me, this is completely different. This is a new way of watching baseball, especially, you know, compared to the last couple of years when you do have those empty stadiums. Now, you know, you look at that Russell Martin home run, and even watching it on replay a couple times, you look in the background, not at Martin, but at the fans, and look at how quickly the fans stand up. Like, they're ready. They're watching that moment, and they're ready to jump up and cheer. And then it takes a split second for everyone to be on their feet cheering that home run on.
Yeah, and it, maybe Russ Martin's home run will be this generation's version of the Roberto Alomar home run, or someone pointed out, the Candy Maldonado home run. I mean, I think Ed Sprague and Joe Carter, because those home runs occurred in the World Series, that along with Robbie Alomar's home run, to me, those are the ones that are kind of on a different level. But again, we're talking 92, 93. Now we're talking about 2015. And Russ Martin's home run may be kind of that first little big event for this generation's Blue Jays fans.
I think it could be. And you know what's, in my opinion, a certainty is that one way or another, we're going to be talking about this 2015 Blue Jays team for a while.
Yep.
You know, you look back at really any of the notable years in Blue Jays history, whether it's 85 or 92 or 93 or you know, even 87, if, as much as that's a disappointing year for Blue Jays fans. You know, I think that 2015, one way or the other, is going to fall into that category of distinctive Blue Jays seasons, one that, for whatever happens, whether they're knocked out in the division series or even if they have a collapse and go 0-10 down the stretch, one way or another, this is going to be a year that people remember.
I want to talk about an article that Shai Davidi has up on the Sportsnet website right now, sportsnet.ca. But you've heard us talk all along about the R.A. Dickey effect, and it's particularly notable because R.A. Dickey is starting for the Blue Jays tonight. And, you know, there's always this thinking that throwing a knuckleball pitcher at a team tends to put the team in a funk. I mean, we think to the Jays, back to the Jays series at Yankee Stadium, two series ago at Yankee Stadium, where the Yankees had faced Stephen Wright, a Red Sox knuckleballer, followed up with facing R.A. Dickey. And Joe Girardi told the New York writers that, you know, this just, oh my God, this is the worst thing, back-to-back knuckleball. Our guys, their swings are going to be messed up, their timing's going to be messed up, they're not going to be in the right headspace. It's just, it's the worst thing ever. And there's always been this idea that there is a lingering effect, a hangover from facing a knuckleballer that often manifests itself in the next day's performance. Shai's article breaks down Jay's starts this year after R.A. Dickey. It's remarkable how little difference it makes. I mean, you want to talk about debunking a myth. This doesn't just debunk it. This kind of burns it.
Yeah, and it's, if you look at the peripheral numbers, strikeouts, walks, hits, they're very, very similar. You know, and the ERAs are comparable.
Even the hard contact.
Hard contact. Every way you want to slice the numbers, it does suggest that there's not necessarily something that you can put your finger on and say, well, it matters this much. I mean, I'm sure there's some kind of an effect, but I'm not sure it's an easy one to quantify.
Yeah, it's a fascinating piece. And as I said, it'll be telling because R.A. Dickey is pitching tonight against Jake Odorizzi. Tomorrow, as we said, it'll be Chris Archer against David Price, the past and future, I guess the past and present for the Tampa Bay Rays. One of the stories to come out of that win over the Yankees on Wednesday was Josh Donaldson's performance and what seems to be, I don't know, the rousting of Josh Donaldson's bat from a two-game slumber? maybe a week-long slumber. Looking ahead, how important, Ben, do you think it is that this team wrap up, and I think I know the answer for this, but this team wrap up the division as soon as it can and try to get some of these guys rest? Because I'm thinking of Kevin Pillar, lots of games played. Josh Donaldson, lots of games played. Russ Martin, I think you still want to kind of baby him. Maybe give a chance to, or get a chance to give the relievers a little bit of a rest. How important do you think it is for this team to wrap up the division as soon as possible? Or at this point, are we getting too concerned about when they do it or how they do it? And should we just be focusing on doing it and not looking beyond that?
Yeah, definitely. The first priority is just to get it done somehow. But man, if you could somehow clinch within the next five games, clinch the division, that would be huge. Or even six, seven games, that way you get a few at the end of the year against the Rays in Tampa where you're able to rest those regulars, like mm-hmm. you said. And if it goes down to the wire and they clinch the East on the last or second last day of the season, that'll be fine. There will be an off day, I think a couple off days actually. So there will be a chance to rest their guys. And ultimately, if you win the division, that's the bottom line. But if there's some way that they could clinch it beforehand, you can get a look at Matt Hague. You can get some extra reps for Aaron Loop. You don't have to worry about all these things that mm-hmm. you've been handling for most of the season.
And I think we have to keep in mind that we look at the Blue Jays roster and just kind of assume that it's essentially set for the postseason. But I mean, John Gibbons has said they want to get another look at Matt Hague. I think they know what they have in Ezekiel Carrera. Obviously, you know what you have in Ben Revere and Kevin Pillar and obviously Jose Bautista. But I think there's some players they want to get a read on. You know, there's still the question about, does Dalton Pompey make the postseason roster? I'm a little surprised we haven't seen more of Dalton Pompey. I don't know necessarily when you would get him in the game, because Ben Revere has sort of become, well, he's definitely become an ever-present, so I don't know how you'd try to squeeze Dalton Pompey in there. But how many question marks do you think are there right now in that rotation or in that possible postseason roster, leaving aside the pitching for the time being?
Well, I think really it's a question of how deep your bench is going to be, which mm-hmm. is linked to the pitching. But do you go with two outfielders? I think Carrera, just by virtue of the fact that they've used him more than Pompey, would seem to have an inside track for an outfield spot on a playoff roster. And then if you look at, okay, you're clearly going to have Navarro. You're going to have an infielder, whether that's
Kawasaki or Pennington.
Yeah, exactly.
Until the whiskey's health.
One of those guys would be around. And then you could look at bringing aboard a second bat. So that could be Hag. Clearly one of Colabella or Smoke, I think, would be on the bench. And that's all going to compete with, is it Aaron Loop, or do you bring aboard, is LaTroy Hawkins healthy enough? I think those are some of those questions that they're wrestling with.
It's Baseball Central with Jeff Blair and Ben Nicholson-Smith. Ray Ratto of CSN Bay Area will join us in a few minutes. We'll talk about this Barry Zito-Tim Hudson matchup that's coming up in the weekend. An interesting item on MLB.com from AJ Casavell, and it's something that it's kind of been, we really haven't talked about it in this show and in this city just because there's so much focus on what the Jays are doing. But, you know, if you look at the National League Central right now, you've got St. Louis, Chicago, Pittsburgh, or Pittsburgh, Chicago, I should say. Three best records. Two of those teams are going to play in the wild card play-in. If the road team wins that play-in, you could end up possibly with the team with the second best record in baseball not even getting a home playoff game.
It's crazy.
But, you know, and now, Ben, people are talking about, well, maybe do you need to reevaluate the wild card? And that kind of scares me because I like it. This is a shame, but I like it the way it is now. And you know, it's since Major League Baseball went to the three-division format in 1994, I mean, this is a rarity. No third-place team has ever been among the top six teams overall, let alone the top three. And if you want to go... You know, want to go further than that, the 2015 Central Division in the National League will probably be just the second division in the wild card era to have the two best teams record-wise. That was 2001. The Mariners had 116 wins. The A's had, I want to say, they had 102. It was more than 100. And the National League hasn't seen its two best teams come from the same division since 2007. And it... statistically, the likelihood of the three best teams in baseball coming from the same division is about 1.5%. So, in other words, it's nothing wrong with the system right now.
Yeah. It's once a century, if you look at it that way. I mean, and sure, it could happen more. You never know how that coin is going to land. But I think not only do you have three really good teams, but you also have two really bad teams. So it requires a perfect storm where the Reds, okay, they're trading Mike Leake and they're trading Johnny Cueto and they're starting now a rookie basically every single day. The Brewers have struggled all season long. So it's not only that these three teams are good, but they're going up against two really bad ones. Yeah, it's going to be really rough for whichever one of those teams loses out. And it's a shame because I would want to see both the Cubs and the Pirates play a full series. But if it happens once every couple decades, I'm not going to get too worried about that.
Should also mention, by the way, that there has been a division title claimed. Last night, the Kansas City Royals locked up the American League Central. It seems as if they've had it locked up since the end of May, but they officially locked it up last night. They are two wins ahead of the Blue Jays, if you're looking at the best overall record in the American League, which would carry home field advantage through the playoffs. Some tough news for Kansas City yesterday. Greg Holland, their closer, has been shut down. The last I heard, he might need Tommy John surgery. It sounds like it's definitely going to be Tommy John surgery if it's a UCL. So Wade Davis is going to be the Kansas City closer. Greg Holland is done for the year. You know, again, I want to get ahead of ourselves here because the Jays still have some business to take care of. But I think it's fine to talk about this stuff, Ben. You look at these teams right now. Which team would scare you as a potential ALCS opponent for the Blue Jays? Or even, an ALDS opponent. Which team would scare you out of the teams that are kind of jockeying for a position right now? Because I think, to me, it might still be the Yankees. The Yankees in Texas.
Why would the Yankees scare you?
I just... Tanaka, Severino, Nova, the way he pitched here. I just... To face that caliber of pitching so often in such a short period of time might concern me. Now, the flip side argument would be for the Yankees pitchers to face the Jays offense in a short period of time would also seem to be an issue. And I guess the other thing is, I don't know if I necessarily want to get into a battle of the back end of the bullpens.
Not with New York.
With New York.
No. Yeah.
You know, I'll take the lead, the build up. I'll take the Jays starting pitchers as well. But a one run game, in the eighth inning, as much as I love what Roberto Osuna has done, I don't know if I want to go head to head with Miller and Betances. Right. Which matchup would worry you the most?
You know, I think the Royals are right up there with the Jays. Now, they wouldn't face each other in the division series.
Right.
So if we're talking about division series opponents, I'm not sure that there's a team that the Blue Jays should be all that scared of.
All right.
That's not to say that they're going to win. They could lose in three games. But I think that the Blue Jays are a better team. And the other thing is, you know, the Blue Jays are going to be able to leverage their best relievers a lot in the postseason. Mm-hmm. And that can play in their favor because you're not using the middle relievers as much.
Right. And, you know, Texas is sort of the hot team right now. They're the team that has really kind of made a push and really thrown the fear into the Houston Astros. I don't know. Playing Texas, I think the Jays could play Texas pretty well.
I think so.
You know, and the same with LA. You know, I used to think it was Houston, but as I said, if Houston does get in the playoffs, it looks like they're going to be life and death to get into the playoffs. I don't think Houston's the same team right now that they were a month ago. I think you're starting to see some fraying at the seams. Yeah, it might be the Yankees.
Yeah, it could be. And the other thing with the Yankees is they have a lot of right-handed pitching. Mm-hmm. So that is tougher on the Blue Jays. You look at those West Coast teams, well, not West Coast in the Rangers case, but they have two lefties in Holland and Hamels. You know you'd see a lot of them. Hamels, of course, a tough matchup, but the Blue Jays do so well against left-handed pitching that could end up playing in their favor. And you even look at, you know, Houston. They have Keuchel and Kazmir. You know, if you look at the Angels, they have Andrew Heaney. So there's a lot of left-handed pitching in the AL West.
One of the other things I want to talk about with Ben Nicholson-Smith and Baseball Central, the individual awards race. I think for a lot of us, we've just looked at Josh Donaldson and just kind of penciled him in as an MVP because the season, some of the troubles Mike Trout has had. But lo and behold, Mike Trout is on fire. The LA Angels of Anaheim are back in the picture. I'm afraid that if it's at all close, there will be a bias to Mike Trout because he's Mike Trout among voters.
I get the sense, though, that there's so much momentum for Josh Donaldson having played so well all season long. And I think actually the narrative plays in his favor this time. I think that the Blue Jays almost have that narrative edge where if there is a little bump as far as the storyline and the off-field contributions, I think that guys like Donaldson and Price might benefit from that.
Well, you had the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred, yesterday come out in a national show in the U.S., and he was asked what would be your perfect World Series matchup, what would be the one that baseball would most like to see, and he said Chicago and Toronto, which, you know, I think is probably going to surprise a lot of people. But you may be right. I think we may underestimate the interest and the amount of play the Blue Jays get and generate south of the border.
I think so. And I think it changed really quickly, where for a long time, and even going into this season for much of the 2015 year, basically the Blue Jays are an afterthought. No one's really looking that closely at them. Sure, they have some good players, but they're not in that national conversation in the same way that the Cardinals and Giants and Yankees are. And now, I think that we're seeing a really rapid change where people are, I mean, I'm sure you see the same thing, but national writers are writing about the Blue Jays and they're on ESPN and Sportsnet's setting records for broadcasts. And all of that is because this team is really good. But I do think the interest level south of the border has increased in a huge way.
And David Price, the Cy Young Award, I think he's at this point, barring total collapse, I would think he's got it. I would think he'd have a shot at being the first pitcher since Rick Sutcliffe to change teams in the middle of a year and win a Cy Young Award. Now, Rick Sutcliffe went one better. He changed teams. He changed leagues in the middle of the season, went from Cleveland to Chicago and ended up going on to win a Cy Young Award. But you may see David Price pull that off.
I think you could. And I think that maybe Price right now, just to throw a number out there, say maybe he's 60-40. Mm-hmm. And I would say with Donaldson, I think Donaldson's going to win. And I think it would take basically Trout hitting five homers this week and the Angels having a miraculous comeback. So I'd say for Donaldson, it's probably something like 90-10.
What would concern you the most about facing the Rays this weekend?
I think it's the pitching.
Just the pitching.
It's not the bats.
Yeah, well, it's certainly not the bats. That's true.
I think it's just Archer, Odorizzi. What if those guys go seven? Say Odorizzi goes seven and strikes out nine. Then Archer goes eight and strikes out eight. I mean, at that point, you could be down a couple games and things could start to look dicey. So these are really big games.
We're going to be joined in a few minutes by Ray Ratto of CSN Bay Area, and I'll give you the background of the story we're going to talk to Mr. Ratto about. And I mentioned this a little bit at the start of the show. Throughout baseball, there have been staffs where you've had great young pitchers all kind of emerge at the same time. And this may be kind of particularly telling for the Blue Jays looking ahead to next year, where you may have Marcus Stroman, Aaron Sanchez, Roberto Osuna, as part of the same staff. But we've seen this in baseball before, where staff comes up, three guys, it seems as if the magic number is three, and I'm thinking of the Mets, Paul Wilson, Bill Pulsifer, and Jason Isringhausen. They immediately come to mind, but it seems as if you quite often get threes. There's quite often trios of young pitchers that come up at the same time and dominate. Now, sometimes they have a great deal of success. Sometimes is the case, as in the case of what the Mets were calling Generation K, those three pitchers, they flame out. But for the Oakland Athletics, Barry Zito, Tim Hudson, and Mark Mulder were just about the biggest thing in baseball. And as a matter of fact, in Oakland, they call it the Big Three era. Those three pitchers combined to go, this is remarkable, 275 and 144. They had a 357 ERA in Oakland. Each of the three ranks among the Oakland Athletics all-time top 10 in wins, strikeouts, and winning percentage. Three of them, I'm sorry, Barry Zito won a Cy Young Award in 2002. Mulder finished second in 2001. Tim Hudson finished second in 2000. They were kind of a once-in-a-generation staff. So kind of a cool thing. Tim Hudson has announced that he's shutting it down after this year at the age of 40. And he will be making his second last start of the season on the weekend in Oakland on Saturday. So what the Oakland Athletics did is they went out and signed Barry Zito, who's 37 years old. Pardon me? They called him up, sorry. They called up Barry Zito, and he's 37 years old. He's also leaning toward retirement. So Barry Zito and Tim Hudson are going to face each other in this game on Saturday. Mark Mulder, who's 38, and he last pitched in 2008 before he had a bunch of injuries and way too young, saw his career shut down at way too young. He will be around, and in fact, the next day they will throw out, the three of them will throw out the first pitch. But when these three pitchers were together, the A's had a 597 winning percentage. They made the playoffs four times. This is kind of what this, and this is one of the things with Moneyball, because a lot of people did not like the way Moneyball sort of glossed over the fact that all those scouts that everybody was pointing at and having fun with, a lot of those scouts did the legwork that saw this once in a generation staff come together. So it's a fascinating story. And as I said, if you're a Blue Jays fan and you're looking ahead to having maybe your own generation of three really brilliant arms, it's kind of a cool story. Ray Ratto of the CSN Bay Area will join us when Baseball Central continues in the home of the Blue Jays, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Sportsnet 590, The Fan, on demand. Now, back to more Baseball Central on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Good night. Welcome back to Baseball Central for Friday, September 25th. Jeff Blair, Ben Nicholson-Smith. Kevin Barker will roll in sometime around the noon hour. Cliff Floyd of MLB Network will be along for his weekly appearance on our show. and that'll be at 12:15. So you heard us talking before the break about kind of a cool matchup on Saturday. Tim Hudson is going to make what will probably be his second last start of his career at the age of 40 against Barry Zito of the Oakland Athletics. What is kind of neat about that is Barry Zito and Tim Hudson and Mark Mulder were kind of the holy trinity of pitching in Oakland for a while. And, of course, the careers have gone different directions. Mark Mulder got out of the game. It was like 2009, way too early. And Barry Zito's kind of, he spent the first part of the year in the minor league system. He's kind of been in purgatory for a while. Even when he was with the San Francisco Giants, there was always a question as to whether or not he was going to be, or at least in a couple of years, there was always a question about whether or not he would actually be in the postseason roster. So this is kind of one of these nice little, we're going to tie everything together. We're going to put a nice bow around the package deals. And, going back and looking, doing some reading and just kind of reminding myself about how good that triumvirate was, it really is remarkable. Ray Ratto is a senior insider for CSN Bay Area. He's one of our favorites. You can follow him on Twitter at Ratto CSN. He joins us on Baseball Central. Hello, Mr. Ratto.
Hiya, Pops.
What's up, man?
I don't know. It's 8:45 where we're at, so I'm not even paying attention yet.
That's good. Well, I'll get your attention with this. Did you hear the big story out of London today?
What, that Sepp Blatter got corralled by the Swiss authorities?
No.
Oh. Well, then no.
A London Zoo meerkat handler glassed her monkey expert love rival colleague in the face because they had a row over the hunky llama keeper at the zoo. So essentially we had a zookeeper love triangle involving a meerkat handler, a monkey expert, and a llama keeper. And this is big news in England. It was a court case heard today. It's one of the funniest things I've ever, well, it's not really funny. Nobody getting glassed in the face is funny. But
oh,
still.
Wait. Your sense of whimsy is clearly damaged here.
Well, no, but think about the headline writer. That's the headline. Like, how do you short that? You're a newspaper guy. How would you, if I said, Ratto, you know what? There's a love triangle in the zoo in London involving a meerkat handler, a monkey expert, and a llama keeper, and the meerkat handler glassed the monkey expert in the face. You can't boil that down to,
yes, you can.
Three words.
Very simple.
What?
Zoo animals have best day ever.
That's pretty good.
You think they're not watching this and going, yeah.
That's not bad. I like that.
Penned up. Go ahead. Kill each other.
That's not bad. I like that.
Feed me on your way out.
I love that. Anyhow, it's in front of a judge. And apparently it's caught everybody's attention, except for the animals, who is you probably really don't give a damn.
No.
They're being fed.
They are secretly laughing their asses off.
Well, by the way, and the root of this was the Christmas party. Uh-huh. Why am I not surprised? The woman who glassed the other woman at one point during the altercation was dangled over a 30-foot balcony.
That's foreplay I had never considered.
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I'm just...
All right, let's see if gravity still works this close to the zoo.
Anyhow, enough of that. I don't know why it just happened. You know what it was? It popped up on Twitter, and I really shouldn't read. I really shouldn't read Twitter.
Twitter is basically the playground of the insane.
Yes, it is. It truly is. So this matchup, this is... Look, I mean, I'm old and cynical. You're older and more cynicaler than I am. It's kind of a nice story, though, isn't it? Zito against Hudson?
Well, you know, it's funny because it brings up about six different things. On the face of it, yes. It's a hat tip to a nostalgia for a time that really was never as good as anybody hoped it would be. But there are so many little back currents to it. It actually makes it, I mean, not zookeepers in danger funny,
mm-hmm.
but just something. I mean, the A's never pander to their audience.
Right.
I mean, they think this is an incredibly serious thing. So when they called Barry Zito up at the start of September, they made it clear that at best he would get a spot start, but probably not. And as recently as a week ago, they said Barry Zito will not start a game. And then they got more guys hurt. So now, you know, there was a great hue and cry. Well, why aren't you starting Zito? Hudson will be pitching, yada, yada, yada. Isn't this a perfect time? And they finally relented on the theory that we've already sort of pandered by bringing him up because we really don't have a long-term plan for him. So why don't we give the customers what we think they want? And it turns out, I suspect, that what the customers really want is for the A's to eliminate the Giants from the playoffs.
Okay.
In which case, Zito is not your best option. That they'd rather somehow resuscitate Sonny Gray or one of their better pitchers to see if they could knock the Giants out anyway. Because this weekend, the Giants are out, or they're 8 games out in the division, and they're farther out in the wild card. So the A's can knock the Giants out this weekend by winning 2 of 3. And starting Zito is almost, just given, you know, given the results, is almost like saying, well, we're not going to do it on Saturday because, you know, Barry Zito is kind of done. And, you know, Hudson has had a few good starts here at the end, which would make this a matchup that seemingly would advantage the Giants. So the question becomes, well, how do we know what fans really want? Do they want the nostalgia? Or do they want the joy of watching their smug arch rivals with the 3 rings get knocked out of the playoffs? And it just raised sort of a weird dichotomy for me. But on its face, yes, it's a neat little story that for Toronto fans, it's sort of like if you could boil hockey down to a one-on-one contest between Matt Sundin and Wendell Clark. It's
my
two
God.
Guys who were big in the town, but who never, for as good as they were, could get them close to a Stanley Cup.
Interesting.
They're because as good as Mulder, Zito, and Hudson were in Oakland, they were still more promise than delivery because the A's never really went very far with them.
Mm.
So it's not like Maddox, Smoltz, and Glavin.
Right.
I mean, it's more, and this is a basketball analogy, it's more like what the Warriors had with Chris Mullin, Mitch Richmond, and Tim Hardaway, who for many Warrior fans are still the most fun guys the team's ever had and the most fun time they've ever had. But they didn't win anything. So it really was sort of more of a testament of fans love who they love because they choose to love them. And these three guys were loved more for what they could have done than what they actually did. And that's not a knock on them. They never pitched for the best team. But they represented, for A's fans, the sort of the zenith of scouting, the, you know, look, we can do it, you know, with homegrown players. They're really good guys, you know, or just all of it. They they just hit all the marks without actually ever raising a banner.
So, Ray, if their goal in Oakland is to unseat the Giants and end any chance of San Francisco making the playoffs this year, how is this being met by fans in Oakland and by players in the Oakland clubhouse?
I don't know. And that's the thing. It raises questions about what we think we know about fan bases.
Mm-hmm.
Because the A's fans that I talked to, when offering them, I sort of offered, I said, would you rather watch Zito Hudson or watch the A's eliminate the Giants? Almost all of them told me, watch the A's eliminate the Giants because, you know, they've had to watch the Giants have 3 parades. And I think that sticks in their craws.
Mm.
But I can't say that based on, you know, very small anecdotal evidence that I know what the fans want. And that's the thing that strikes me, is that we all made assumptions, and I wrote a week ago that this matchup must happen because this is what the fans would love. And it occurred to me that I have no evidence on which to make that assumption. I don't know what the fans want, because the fans never get to speak other than by showing up at the ballpark. And they're going to sell out tomorrow, but they were going to sell out anyway. So, you know, what do we know? What do we really know about what fans want? And that's what struck me, is that we assumed that they would love Zito Hudson, and I think they'd like it anyway. But if you said you can only have one of those two things, what would you rather have? I have a suspicion that what they would rather have is watching the Giants trudge off the field, eliminated from any postseason possibility, and they be the team to do it. Because while that's not much satisfaction for the season that their team's had, it's something. And it touches all the rivalry buttons and all the, you know, the Giants are smug and, you know, we never get a break, you know, sort of self-victimhood that fans love to play at. So that was the thing that struck me. But in terms of basic emotion, if you removed all the rest of that, yeah, Zito Hudson would be fun because it was nostalgia for a time that seems a lot better than it actually was, but was still pretty good. Hey, Wendell Clark, Matt Sundin.
That's a perfect analogy in conversation with Ray Ratto, senior insider, CSN Bay Area. The other thing, too, of course, is this, the big three, and I'm going to call them the big three, all figured prominently in what turned out to be Moneyball, even though if you can go through Moneyball, and they weren't exactly given a great deal of attention. But the fact that Oakland was able to have three brilliant cost-effective young arms, I mean, that was a lot of the underpinning of what Billy Beane was able to do, wasn't it? And the fact that they got those three cost-effective young arms had a lot to do with the work of the scouts that Billy and the people and Michael Lewis and people like that sort of tended to poo-poo throughout the movie.
Well, the thing is that two of the three were drafted not by Billy, but by Sandy Alderson.
Okay.
And the underpinnings of Moneyball, while everybody focused on, see, they just don't believe in scouts, what they were really trying to do was put baseball talent analysis on a cost-benefit basis. And what they did with those three guys was show that however you get to the end, whether it's with the eyeball test or with a pile full of metrics, the key is to spot talent when it's young and very affordable. So all it is in a lot of ways is it's better to draft and find your own great players than to go searching for them on the market. And that's not a Moneyball construct. That's something that Branch Rickey did 70 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
So it's really sort of a new coat on an old principle, which is get them when they're young, get them when they're controllable. And those three guys got drafted, which is the essence of control, and, you know, nurtured through their system. And the A's almost got the full benefit of that. They just never could get over the hump. But the mythology around these three guys has built, you know, so much so that is, oh yes, this was Billy Beane's first real triumph. Well, no, it wasn't. It was really Sandy Alderson's.
Mm-hmm.
This proves Moneyball. Well, no more than any good draft pick. And ooh, this was one of the seminal moments in Bay Area baseball history. And well, no, it wasn't, because it didn't really result in a title, a World Series appearance, or even an appearance in an LCS. It was they were very, very good, and any team would have loved to have had them. But the A's could never put the rest of it together. And so it really is more of a, we love these guys because we just love them. There's more of an emotional connection than there are huge historical sweeps to make from this, I think.
Mr. Ratto, we're going to let you run. I appreciate you doing this. Great insight and great analogy. Thank you.
Later.
Pardon me?
Give it time. You'll regret it later.
That's not true. I never do that. Thanks, Ray.
All right, buddy.
It's Ray Ratto, CSN Bay Area. It's a hard act to follow. Zoo animals, best day ever.
Wow.
See, that's the thing with Ratto. You can drop stuff like that on him. He's got an answer. You're going to be off for a couple of days doing some personal stuff.
I will be.
Have
then
a good
I'll
trip.
Be back.
Have a good trip. We'll see you next week. Baseball Central's next on Sportsnet Radio and television.